Hey, welcome everybody. It's time once again for another episode of Health Talks with Dr. Trin. The one show, maybe the only show that shows you a way through the crisis, through the chaos, through the confusion to a clearer, healthier life. With the man who's always clear, even at this hour of the morning, Dr. Trin. Hey, sir, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, Paul. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Dominic's here as well. Very excited today to bring on a good friend and colleague, Dr. Mark Schaefer, who is a CEO of a Memorial Care Medical Foundation.
Wow. We are thrilled to have you here. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you. And I'm thrilled to be here bright and early.
You know, can we just jump right into it here? Why is the world so crazy, so confused, so chaotic? We can't seem to get one clear idea. It's a moving target on COVID and so many other subjects here. Why are we all still trying to figure this thing out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's because it's new. You know, it's new to us. None of us have been alive in the last big pandemic.
Yeah.
And so we're learning as we go. And science is new, but it's really amazing how it has moved along so rapidly. And finally, I feel actually pretty optimistic now. It's been kind of a dark, cold winter, which is as dark and cold as you can get for Southern California.
Yeah, right. But so there's hope on the horizon here? Is there hope?
Yeah, there's hope. I mean, we're seeing the numbers go down. Mm-hmm. The number of COVID cases every day have dropped significantly. The number of patients admitted to our hospitals with COVID has gone down significantly. The number of ICU patients has gone down significantly. Of course, we can't let our guard down.
The minute we do that, we think it's gone. It's over. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be a mistake. We need to wear our masks. We need to be physically distant. We need to practice all the hand hygiene recommendations that are out there and give it a little bit more time because now we've got vaccine and it's going to take a while. We've seen it's no quick fix to get everybody vaccinated, but we're excited because we've been a part of that. We've been given that opportunity to help vaccinate the community, and it's really been an amazing thing to do, and we've really enjoyed it.
So let's talk about two issues here this morning. I'm sure we're going to have lots of questions. We always do. See if we can clear up some of the chaos and the confusion. Let's start with where and how you get vaccinated. And before you say that, I got mine. That's floating through me right now here. I got my first one. And it was really, here's the frustrating thing. I'll get in my soapbox for 1 second here. Everybody, the county said, let's set up one app. I got it. Everybody would go get registered. We'll disperse this thing logically. And it was chaos. The thing crashed. You couldn't get on. And when you did get on, like me a month ago, every day it just went and said, nothing today. Check in tomorrow. And people are trying to come up with strategies. Do I do it at midnight? Do I do it in the morning? Do I do it 10 times a day? And then your neighbor says, what's the problem? I got on 10 minutes ago and you raced to get on. Nothing there. So I literally last week, every day I go on and I keep thinking this is crazy. And all of a sudden last Thursday, it said, if you can get here in 1 hour, you're in. I had to drop my whole life, tell everybody, cancel everything and race to go over to SoCA. It was very well organized, I have to say. I was in and out from start to finish in an hour, including I got there a half hour early. Very good. I mean, it was everything I'd heard it wasn't. But is that what we're left to? It's just everybody on your own, find it, figure it out, get it when you can, get there. Or are there other providers like Memorial Care? What are you guys doing to help district? Because I hear the other day we had Katrina Foley, the mayor of Costa Mesa, on, and she said, you know, only 10 or 20% of all the vaccines coming into Orange County are going to the county. It's not like we've got all of it. The majority of it is going to UCI Health or Memorial Care or other places. I don't know. Tell us the facts. What's happening to all the vaccines and what are you guys doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the key is really to be patient because we just don't have enough vaccine to vaccinate everyone that wants it yet. So it's going to take a little bit of time. But yes, the county has their supply and they have their super pods at Disneyland, at SoCA, And now they've opened up at the Anaheim Convention Center and also at the college in Santa Ana.
Yes, I just heard that. Right.
Those are really helpful because they can, you know, do mass immunizations, you know, quite a few in one day. The majority of the vaccine is allocated to the providers, the hospitals and the physicians in the community that have experience giving vaccine. So Memorial Care, we get vaccine from the county, and we've been holding vaccine clinics for our patients ever since the vaccine was first approved back in December.
So people can go to Memorial Care. Do I have to somehow be a member? Do I have to have a doctor associated with them? Or can I just walk in off the street and say, give me a vaccine?
So we're only doing vaccinations by appointment. We don't want people to just walk in. Otherwise, we'll be flooded and people will be disappointed because we have a limited supply. So it helps to be a Memorial Care patient. And if you go to memorialcare.org, our website, you'll find all kinds of information about vaccinations and COVID in general. And what we're doing is setting up different types of clinics. We've actually got at any given time, 5 to 6 clinics running throughout Orange County where we're vaccinating patients. And we're doing, you know, roughly 5,000 to 10,000 a week.
Wow. Okay.
And so, yeah, we just did one. Some of them are our own patients, but some of them are for the community. So over the last few weeks, we've been going to Laguna Woods Village, where the majority of the people there are over 65. There are some younger ones, but we've been doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday clinics where we're doing over 1,000 a day. And those are not necessarily Memorial Care patients. Some of them are, but others are just people that live there. And it's a service that we're doing for the community. And I have to tell you, it's probably one of the most rewarding things I have ever done. The seniors there are just incredibly thankful and grateful. We're all volunteering our time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of unusual. I'm the CEO of our ambulatory division of Memorial Care, and I was out there giving vaccines as well. So lots of doctors, nurses, pharmacists.
Come on. We had the CEO on the front line. Come on. You're up in the corporate tower somewhere here. Awesome.
You know, everybody's got to help. This is such a big, big project to get, you know, millions vaccinated. It's going to take a lot of people and a lot of time. And I'm trained to do that kind of thing. And it was actually a lot of fun getting back into the trenches and being able to talk to patients and give them the vaccine. And they're just thrilled to death to be able to be there. They're just so excited.
Can I tell you, this is, maybe I'm revealing too much here. I'm getting a wave your hand if this is too much information, but you know, I just turned 65, so I made it into the first tier. And then I was frightened. I'm not getting any information. I'm not getting any feedback. Nobody's telling me, talk to me, tell me something. And nobody's talking to me. Everybody's talking at once or nobody's talking at all. And so it's amazing. This show has taken off. We started it by accident at the beginning of COVID, not necessarily to talk about COVID, but to talk about Alzheimer's and other sorts of things. And it's turned into a COVID forum where people come in every week, like who we got here. We got Vilma and Dan and all these other people tuning in again here. And everybody's got the same question. I hear this. I wonder this. Why is it this? Why is there so much scattered information? Is it just the nature of our county? There's 34 cities and 34 voices. The county of Orange has been chaotic and confusing and contradictory at times, quite frankly. Mask, no mask. Federal government, we know what the chaos was there, and maybe we're trying to get it. Why and where are we going? Any better, any worse? What's your take on this, sitting up at the rarefied position you are here? Are we seeing light at the end of the tunnel? Are we coming together, or is there still a lot of coordination necessary?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, we don't have a health system that is extremely coordinated across, you know, whether it's our county or California or the whole U.S., it tends to be pretty fragmented.
Right.
And so, and then throw politics into that, which is always, you know, controversial. And you've got lots of different opinions and some paying attention to science and some not.
Right.
So, you know, our focus has been let's get the word out to the community, to our patients, really to educate. We've spent a lot of time putting information on our website, and we think that patients, you know, trust coming to their healthcare provider
right.
for good information. Our CEO of Memorial Care, the health system, Barry Arbuckle. He's done a number of videos that we send out to the community. We email them out. They're on Facebook, really informational types of videos, so that we're really trying to dispel some of the myths and also really convince patients that it's actually safe to come in and get care.
Right.
That's one of the big things that has really worried us. We've seen this huge drop off in, you know, serious problems, heart attacks, strokes. You know, patients just aren't coming in, or they're ignoring symptoms. It's
right.
Definitely improved since the summertime, but we've really spent a lot of time getting the word out that our clinics are safe, our emergency rooms are safe, we're following all the proper protocols, we have PPE, don't put off necessary care.
But you know the message that
really important.
You know the message that the public's hearing, and it may not match the reality on the ground, but the message is, don't go to the hospital. Don't put off all elective surgery. If you go, it's 4 hours in waiting rooms to get there, and maybe you're exposing yourself because that's where the sick people are and the germs are, and we're seeing hospital workers, you know, overstressed, and we're seeing a system that says stay away until this thing settles down. That's the message I hear over and over again.
Yeah, I think the broadcasts of the huge number of COVID cases in the hospitals and the ICUs, and seeing those healthcare providers, you know, completely dressed up with all their PPE is scary.
Pretty scary.
But fortunately, you know, that's really not the reality anymore. And we've done a really amazing job of separating those patients that are potentially contagious. We test everyone that comes into our hospitals. We isolate the respiratory patients. So probably the safest place actually to be is,
is it really?
In the hospital.
What do you think, Dr. Trin? You were just in the emergency room. You were just in the emergency room. You still keep your hand in. I know you're a researcher and you're on boards and everything here, but you still go out and get in the trenches here and get your hands dirty. What are you seeing?
Oh, yes. I'm in the ER almost on a weekly basis with Memorial Care. And I can tell you that it is safe in the ER because we identify patients as they come in, COVID versus no COVID, and patients who do have COVID, we have created sections of either the ER or the hospital that are designed to not commingle different types of patients. And so you actually feel pretty safe. You know that you're in the, you know, and our staff have, you know, adequate PPEs, and we've never had a shortage of PPEs. I've heard the horror stories at the beginning, and it's never been the case with Memorial Care. So
I'll give you one anecdotal story. Maybe this will help support it. Maybe this is just an outlier, but really even know. I guess I'm not a member of Memorial Care. I don't sort of have a regular doctor I go to. I hate to admit it. I'm sort of like everybody. I have insurance and I sort of go to somebody, and there's some clinics around, and Memorial Care has a bunch of sort of clinics around. And so I live in South Orange County, and I had to go get a test done of all things. I got hired by the Rancho Santiago Community College District to help work on their new reopening of their digital media center. Whole nother story. And so suddenly now, because it's a college, I had to go get a tuberculosis test. I didn't even know those things were still around. I said, where can I go get one? They give me a list. And one of them was a Memorial Care facility down in San Juan Capistrano, which I didn't even know was there. I got to be honest with you. And Rancho Mission Viejo or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the edge of San Juan Capistrano, off of the Ortega Highway down there. So I thought this is going to be a hassle. I don't know if I've ever been to Memorial Care. Maybe I have or haven't. I try and stay away from doctors. I try not to go in and talk to them. I try to do everything I can. I'm the old aging baby boomer who's afraid to face reality sometime. And I go into this facility. It was quick. It was clean. Everybody's masked up. Everybody this and that. And there was nobody there. And that shocked me because I thought this is kind of an emergency walk-in clinic. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be here for 5 days and I'm going to see sick people. And what am I doing? I just got to get this TB test. It was quick. It was easy. And I kind of thought, this is weird. This is not the story I'm getting here. The story I'm getting is it's chaotic. It's confusing. They're stressed. There's sick people everywhere. They're out in the hallways. Don't go.
Yeah, no, your experience is typical of our Memorial Care clinics. So we have really learned over the last year how to space out our patients, how to manage the flow, to make sure that you're not sitting in a waiting room with a million other people.
Coughing, hacking, infecting me. Yeah, right, exactly.
Exactly. We screen them online. We screen them by phone. We screen them at the door.
Yeah, it's like they
bring them
screen
right into an exam room if they're sick. We've really learned. And I think the other thing that you're seeing now is the impact of virtual care video. So we were able to transition right away in March, last March, to video. And now we do, you know, literally thousands of video visits every week. And so,
is that going to go away, or is that part of the new normal that we keep hearing about? What do you think, Dr. Trinh? Is a remote care a temporary band-aid, or is it the new future?
I don't know, but I like wearing my pajamas right now.
I know. You're sitting in your underwear right now. Shoulder up that we can see you here, right?
I think we're realizing from both physicians and patients perspective that we can get a lot done through video without a patient necessarily having to take time off work, providing transportation, providing, you know, childcare to come to the office if it's not necessary. So we are actually learning that a lot can be done through video, and convenience of it is amazing.
So walk me through this. It still seems like I got to go see somebody. He's got to look in my throat. He's got to feel my pulse. I want him to hold my hand and say, it's okay, you're going to get through this. And yet, I hate to say it, doctor, I don't want to be critical here, but, you know, through the last 10, 20 years of my life, the time with the doctor has shrunk. It feels more like an assembly line in and out. Before I can even ask my question, he's out the door, and he or she's out the door and onto somebody else here. So do you get better care, more time? Is it, talk me through the difference between walking in and talking online.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things that really need to be done in person, certain types of physical exam. But when we look at all the different types of visits, we see there's a good 60 to 70% of them that really don't require you to be physically present or to have physical exam, especially the routine follow-up things like diabetes and high blood pressure. Patients can take their blood pressure at home. They can show us the results. There's all kinds of remote monitoring tools that we have at our disposal. And so we find that people are just, they're more relaxed at home. They don't have to worry about travel and getting in. It just works really well.
Do you get more time? Is it more interactive, or is it, I've never done it, so I don't know. Does it feel like you got your 5 minutes and the clock is ticking and you see it ticking in front of you and time's up and sorry, go see somebody? Or is it somehow more connected? In a weird way, it seems like it would be more connected because it's just you and the doctor on a call. It's not, I'm standing in line, go here, go there, wait here. It too much of what you guys do today in the medical system, I'm sorry to say, feels like a factory.
Yeah, and I think it is kind of more personal when you do it like this, because it's, you know, we're one-on-one, the three of us here, and, you know, you can't really be too distracted. So they're 20-minute visits, and the nurse comes in to the video ahead of time and gets a little bit of history, makes sure you're taking your medications, all the usual things, and
see if my tongue's hanging out or if I'm laying on the side or whatever here.
And we're actually going to be launching some new tools that will allow patients to have a few things at home where they can actually put a device on their chest or over their lungs or in their mouth, and we can do additional physical exam.
You can see your oxygen level, maybe, or you can check your heart rate or something.
Exactly. Yeah. The other thing that I think is really useful with video is just the whole behavioral health component. We're seeing, you know, even before the pandemic, depression and anxiety has just been a huge national problem.
We're going to talk about that.
You know,
yeah.
Now it's, you know, we're seeing 3 to 4 times more depression.
Wow. Wow. Really?
People are staying at home. Their jobs are impacted. The stress on the news, the elections was stressful.
And the confusion. If you confuse me, I'm scared. Where I'm stuck at home, I'm all alone, and there's nobody to talk to. And that's why forums like this, we'll get to some of your questions. We've got a whole slew of questions piling up here. I'm sorry I'm dominating this, but it's a rare chance to get to talk to somebody who's at the center of our healthcare systems here, not only to express our concerns, but to ask our questions here. What do you think? Dr. Trinh talks about this all the time. our childlike view, just get me the vaccine and we'll get back to the way it was. It's all going to be okay. Just hang on. And when it's over, I don't ever want to hear the word COVID. I don't want to think about it. It's gone forever. It ain't so, right, Dr. Trim? We may be in this for a while, not just the illness, but the after effects.
The long haul, we caught long haulers, we caught long COVID. We're seeing folks who are stating, you know, they had COVID weeks ago, months ago. Why are they still feeling bad? Why are they still short of breath?
Yeah.
Why do they still have this brain fog and the depression, anxiety that comes along with that?
And talk about the staff, you guys. I hear doctors killing themselves and nurses quitting. And I'm like, I can't believe this, but I guess they're just so overwhelmed psychologically and physically, and they're just giving up, burning out. You know, is this the next unseen epidemic and problem out there that we've overtaxed not just the system, but the people?
Absolutely. I mean, particularly when you look at it nationally, and certain health systems, certain regions have been impacted more than others. You know, we're fortunate enough that we put in place a lot of resources early on for our staff and for our physicians so that they've got access to psychologists, psychiatrists. We have group therapy sessions, and we have our PPE, which is the most important thing to make them feel comfortable and safe.
Right.
And that makes a huge difference. And just recently, one of the things I wanted to mention was that we've rolled out a tool called SilverCloud. And SilverCloud is an online web-based tool for educational and therapeutic support for depression, for anxiety, for sleeplessness, and other medical problems. And very much like video chat, you can do it online in the privacy of your own home. You can do it at your own pace. There are 6 to 8 week sessions. It can be anonymous too. You don't even have to put your name to register.
That's powerful because a lot of people don't want to come forward and admit like any problem. I got a problem here.
Exactly. And behavioral health always has a stigma to it. So we rolled this out for our memorial care patients, you know, many months ago and found it to be amazingly successful. We then rolled it out to all of our staff and physicians. And then just recently, we've made it available to anyone in the community.
Wow, you know, that's what I was going
to
go for.
To be a memorial care patient. And it's free. We're covering the cost of it. So
where do you go? How do you get it? What's it called again here? We'll give you one more plug for this thing because that's a powerful thing I never heard of.
SilverCloud.
Yeah, SilverCloud. If you go to memorialcare.org, you'll find it there, or memorialcare.org/SilverCloud. You'll find it and you can sign up, and it's just a great tool. We look at some of our stats and find that the number of patients with depression that get into remission within 90 days, which is kind of something that we follow, is around 70 to 80%, which is just a huge, huge benefit.
Put the link up there, will you, Dr. Trin, if you haven't already?
Well,
here. All right, let's get to some of these questions here because they're piling up fast here and everybody's saying, shut up, Paul, and then ask some questions here. This one will, I'm sure, I guess nobody takes pleasure in hearing problems, but, you know, you're always being compared to the other big systems, Kaiser and whatnot. Robert says, Kaiser just told us that my son cannot be scheduled for a wellness appointment due to the pandemic. Are you guys canceling stuff or is...
No, there was a period of time where our hospitals... We're not doing elective surgeries. It was the state actually required us to stop, but that's over with. We're doing elective surgeries. We're doing wellness checks. We're doing everything.
Okay. Let's get some other ones. Read some other ones on there, doctor. I know Dan and some others had some questions specifically about COVID here. Everybody.
So Robert, you know where to get your child's care now for wellness.
Yeah, right.
If Kaiser isn't allowing your kids to come in.
Yeah.
Dan Daly says, what percentage of the population do we think is fearful of the vaccine and probably won't get it? And is that going to affect
our herd immunity, our wiping this thing out?
Yeah. You know, I think what we're seeing is about 20 to 30% are not signing up for it. And I think some of it is just not that they don't want to get it at all or ever. Some of them just want to wait. They don't want to be first in line. Perhaps they want to wait for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is only one dose. So I think we're going to see that decline over time. You know, people like you, Paul, you've gotten your vaccine. You don't have, you know, two horns on your head or
no. I have a tail growing, but nothing else.
I the cap he does, but anyway.
Why are people afraid, guys? And put this out to the audience. Why are people afraid? And I'll give you three things I hear over and over again. One is they rushed it. I'm not sure it's really ready for prime time. Two, I'm hearing side effects. On this show, we had, Patty and some other regular guests came on and said, hey, we all got the second dose and we all got sick. It knocked us for a wallop. They were talking about the Moderna one as opposed to the Pfizer one. Seems to be the rumor is that has more of a kick. I don't know if that's true or not. So not ready for the reactions or the persistent, you know, the conspiracy world we live in. This is something evil. This is something deadly. It has bad stuff in it. You're getting a bit of the virus. Although Dr. Trin talks about this all the time, the way it's been done, it's not live virus in your body here. Talk about some of those things. Or what are you hearing and how do we combat this?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things. It's misinformation. It's not live virus. It cannot make you get COVID. But like any treatment, any vaccine, there are going to be some side effects, but they're typically pretty mild. We've done now over 50,000 vaccinations, and we have not had, you know, any serious anaphylactic allergic reactions. We've had a few reactions where we've monitored people in the emergency room, but, you know, knock on wood, nothing serious. So I think the initial discussion about allergic reactions and anaphylaxis were hyped up a lot by the press, and I think that scared people away, but it is a safe vaccine. And yes, it was developed fast, but we certainly needed it very quickly. And I think, you know, everybody should get it.
Well, give us some other ones on there, Dr. Trin. I know, Vicky, somebody else was asking questions about COVID.
Yeah, I guess folks are concerned about unknown long-term side effects. I guess that comes with anything new.
And particularly for, I'll give you one I hear. I don't know if this has any, I don't want to spread rumors or feed to the frenzy, but kids, is it safe for kids? Was it tested on kids or was it just tested on adults?
Yeah, so they're actually doing some ongoing clinical studies right now on children. I actually saw in the news last night that they're doing, you know, under 16 testing. So I don't think we'll know for sure until they release the results of those studies, but I'm guessing that they will find it safe in kids, just like all the other vaccines are safe in children. And I think the key thing to understand about vaccines is really all that they're doing is stimulating your immune system.
Yeah, right.
They're faking out your immune system. They're so that your immune system thinks you have an infection when you don't really have one. And so we don't think that's going to cause any long-term side effects.
Right.
Yeah, I call those side effects war games.
Yeah.
The immune system's kept revving up for like a war game, practicing against the real thing. That's why you have symptoms like, you know, chills or aches and, you know, kind of like a viral syndrome. But it's practicing. That's why it's practicing on the vaccine as opposed to the real virus, right?
Exactly.
Yes. There's a question about having autoimmune. If you have an autoimmune condition, you know, should you get the vaccine or should you not get a vaccine? Mm. Things of that sort.
Or reduced immune system. Something horrible.
If your immune system's weak.
Yeah, you've got AIDS or you got something else or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, it is okay for those people to get the vaccine. And actually, starting March 15th, there's going to be an additional population of patients in California that will be eligible for the vaccine. And that includes patients that have cancer and are immunosuppressed and a number of other serious conditions. So it is safe in those patients.
I don't know why you wouldn't want to get it. I hate to admit it, but I got a little teary-eyed when I finally got it in my arm after a month of worrying and wondering. I looked up and I said, thank you. And I was surprised myself. I got a little teary-eyed, like, now I know I'm only halfway home. I got one more to do in a few weeks here. The feeling I got of just, this is a strange analogy. I'm a good Irish Catholic. It feels like when I used to go to confession as a kid here and I'd walk out and felt, oh, I'm safe. I'm okay. I'm not going to go to hell here. I feel like I'm somehow safe. Is that a false sense of security? I think we all are thinking once we're vaccinated, we're good to go and I can go do anything now. Nobody can get me sick and nothing's going to happen here.
Right. No, I think it is a good sense of security and it's a relief. after, you know, a year of being locked down and being afraid to go anywhere. But it isn't 100% protection. The Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines are, you know, about 94-95%. And there are some new variants out there. So it's still possible to get COVID. But what it does do is it is pretty much 100% at protecting you from dying from COVID.
There you go. Say so that again. So you don't, might get sick, but your chances of dying go way down here.
Exactly. The few people that have been vaccinated and have then subsequently gotten COVID, they've had, you know, mild disease, not severe disease or death.
So will we be living with this forever or for a while, Dr. Trin? Is this going to be the annual booster? Is this going to be variants coming and we're always trying to tune it in? And, oh, we got to, the South African variant, we got to give you a new booster shot because the original one doesn't help this new variant or fight it as effectively.
And these new boosters are being worked on now as we speak to cover the new variants. It's kind of like a battle between, you know, the bugs versus man. The bugs try to escape. You know, the bug try to escape our vaccine by mutating, and then we catch up and we create boosters and we modify the vaccines to catch up to the bug. But it's going to be with us for a while, and it'll probably be annual COVID vaccinations until this is under control.
And is there hope that it will wipe out? And I'm going to use this. We don't talk much about it, but there have been certain other examples of this, not just in 1918, in Asia and elsewhere. SARS, MERS, the Middle Eastern version, the bird flu one in China or whatever here. We saw some variants or similar things, related things, and two things. One, those went away. They mutated out of existence. And two, the societies that those sprang up, particularly Asia, were forever changed in their habits. They wear masks all the time and continued to wear them. We can't wait to throw them away. What do you think? Are we going to continue to see safe distancing and masking? And is there any hope this thing will mutate its way out of existence?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it depends on our leadership and, you know, the ability to convince the public that, you know, wearing a mask, you know, when you're around other people is not an awful thing.
It feels awful. It looks awful. But I don't know what we're so afraid of, why we fight it so hard. Me too.
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, it's interesting because the flu, which, you know, we thought was going to be just devastating this year, has been pretty much non-existent.
I've heard
that. We've had practically no cases of the flu, and it's because we're wearing masks and it's not spreading. So it's not a bad thing. And, you know, hopefully once we have 70 or 80% of the population vaccinated, then we won't have to worry so much about COVID, but it would be nice if we kept to, you know, continue to do some of these public health measures to protect the population.
So, for example, Dr. Trin, are we ever going to go back to shaking hands again? Or are we all going to fist bump for the rest of our lives here? I'm not so sure. I'm not that crazy to go shake everybody's hand again, even when I feel safe and secure.
It's like, should I hug you?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Well, hopefully at some point when we're all, you know, vaccinated, right?
But I wonder, I mean, I think some of these habits that we've just fell into, will we be forever washing our hands more? Will sanitation, hand sanitizer just be the norm on every counter in America here, every business in America here?
I think they will. I think some of these practices make a lot of sense from a public health perspective, and they'll continue.
Well, I hope so. What are the questions? You got a rare chance to talk to the CEO of Memorial Care here. I can't believe that people are being so polite. Nobody's blasting you. Nobody's yelling at you. Nobody's demanding to bring pitchforks to all the hospitals. And I'm coming to get these guys here. I think that's one of the positive news. If there are bad guys in this thing, and we've all elected our bad guys, political officials, local officials, drug companies or whatever, you guys don't seem to be, and not just Memorial Care, but the healthcare system that has been criticized as of late as being too inefficient, too costly, too confusing, hasn't taken, I don't think, many attacks. I don't hear people coming on right now as I thought they would be saying, oh, Memorial Care, wait till I get this guy on. I'm going to tell him about this. I don't hear that. Is that, I guess that's a good thing. It shows you guys are doing something good, or maybe you've just ducked the heat. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our focus has always been on our patients. And that's our mission, is to take care of the community. We're very mission driven. And, you know, when COVID started, our first motto really to everyone was safety, 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 safety for our patients, for our employees, for our physicians. And I think that's been a successful strategy for us. And, you know, just our overall strategy for Memorial Care has been to really expand throughout the community and provide what we call value-based care. Mm-hmm. So value-based care is really the highest quality and the best service at an affordable price. And so to do that, we've been opening up community clinics. We've been adding different primary care physicians. We've been adding tools for our patients, like online resources. If you go on our website, you'll see something called Memorial Care Now, which is basically, we want you to be able to have access to healthcare when you want it and in the way you want it, on your schedule, not necessarily on our doctor's schedule. So we have, you know, virtual scheduled appointments with our primary care doctors. We have urgent care that you can do by video.
Urgent care by video. I'm urgently need somebody, and is this like the middle of the night? It's 2 a.m. and I'm scared and I need some help here. Do I go to the hospital? What do I do?
Yeah, and we have those options too, right? So there's a little bit of judgment that you have to use in terms of whether you need to be seen in person at an urgent care or go to our emergency room. But you can do an unscheduled video visit with one of our urgent care physicians and, you know, have minor things taken care of virtually.
And maybe have your mind put at ease. Somebody, Gwen, I hope I'm saying it correct, wants to know, tell us about the connection with you and Bristol Park. Because that's how I got connected. I used to have my doctor, when I really sort of had a primary doctor, was with Bristol Park Medical Group. And then he retired and I just sort of stayed on. And I guess that's where I think our first. Are you guys an outgrowth of that? Did you acquire them? Give me the quick rundown of Memorial Care. I'm not even sure I understand who you are and what your system is. I know it's big, but I don't really understand it.
I'll give you a quick rundown of Memorial Care and then I'll tell you about Bristol Park.
Okay.
So Memorial Care is an integrated health system, not-for-profit system. We're made up of four hospitals, two in Long Beach Medical Center and Miller Children's,
okay,
and two in Orange County, Orange Coast Medical Center in Fountain Valley, and Saddleback Medical Center in Laguna Hills.
Okay.
So that's the hospital division. And then on the medical foundation side, which is my side, which is the ambulatory, everything outside of the hospital, we have Memorial Care Medical Group.
Ambulatory just means you can walk in, right?
Yeah. It's not inpatient, it's outpatient.
Right.
So Memorial Care Medical Group and Greater Newport Physicians. Those are our two physician divisions. And then we also have urgent care centers, we have breast centers, we have imaging centers, surgery centers, all these things that are out in the community away from the hospitals where it's more convenient, better access, all that stuff. And we take care of roughly about 750,000 patients a year.
Wow. This is all outpatient, at least in your division here.
All outpatient. We have about 200 sites of care. Some of them are branded as Memorial Care, but others are in partnership with some other companies. For example, physical therapy. We have a joint venture with California Rehab. So you may have heard of California Sports and Rehabilitation as their formal name.
I have.
Yeah. And we have 17 locations throughout Orange County and LA County. So lots of different locations to provide.
And healthcare. What's the connection with Bristol Park? Is that your old name or is that something you acquired or merged with? What's the deal with Bristol? Didn't you start off with Bristol Park, Dr. Trent? Weren't you a Bristol Park doctor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so did I.
Oh, okay.
So Bristol Park was a medical group, an independent medical group that started actually in 1961. Memorial Care actually started in 1907.
What? 1907?
Yeah. Memorial Care has been around for over 100 years. It started off in Long Beach. And so in 2011, Bristol Park joined Memorial Care and became the first affiliated medical group to start the Memorial Care Medical Foundation. And Bristol Park actually changed its name and became Memorial Care Medical Group.
Go.
And then we grew rapidly from 10 locations to over 35 locations.
Is that what you got now? You got 35 different, like I didn't know there was one in I guess it's Rancho Mission Viejo. Or whatever. Yeah, right.
Yeah, we have 35 Memorial Care Medical Group locations, and then Greater Newport Physicians, which is our independent practice group. They have, you know, over 50 primary care locations throughout Orange County and LA County.
I think it's the future of medicine. I mean, it has been for a while. Not everybody needs to go inpatient in a hospital. And when you do, it's expensive. It's scary. They want to get you in and out. Medicare wants to get you in and out, all this stuff. It's not meant to be, as my parents used to think of it, as you just went to the hospital when you had anything, whether it was a cold or a crisis. And my late father used to laugh and call you guys doc in a box. You know, it was sort of like a neighborhood drive-through type of thing. But I said, what's bad with that? You've still got quality care, and it's in a neighborhood location. It's easy to get into. It's quick to get into. It's there when you need it. And then if you need something more, they can elevate you up the chain. You know, you can go to the hospital or whatever.
Yeah, and there are certain things that absolutely need to be done in the hospital. And thank goodness we have them, because when you need one,
you need it. You know,
it's good that we have them. But a lot of things, like most outpatient surgery, can be done in a freestanding surgery center that's not even near the hospital. And it's actually the same surgeons.
Yeah.
Go to the hospital.
In a room, in a place. It's somehow it's not in, you know, doesn't look like Ben Casey anymore here. I'm dating myself.
State-of-the-art equipment and staffing. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, most care really is delivered outside of hospitals. And so we want to just be
more convenient. It seems like this whole idea of getting things down into the community, community policing, community government, community hospitals, community clinics, it's trying to get it from one centralized location, which was the move forever and everything. Combine them all into one big hub. For example, my parents lived out, they left this earth a long time ago, but they lived out in the desert in Palm Springs, Palm Desert. And out there, it's Eisenhower. Everything's Eisenhower, the giant major hospital. And everybody went to Eisenhower, and consequently, Eisenhower is huge, and it's a bit confusing and chaotic to get in there and find your way and everything. And they started doing more, not enough of them, but more of these kinds of neighborhood clinics, originally as emergency, you know, kind of 24-hour, what do you call them, you know, suddenly, urgent care facilities. But I think I'm all for decentralizing things and getting more rather than one. I don't know, does that... It must be more expensive to do it that way, or is it less expensive that way? It seems like it'd be cheaper to combine everybody in one big building, but maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, certainly large buildings are, you get some economy of scale when you do that and efficiencies, but really we want to be out in the communities because people don't really want to travel more than about 5 miles for their healthcare. And they also want to develop that personal relationship with their physician. And so if you're going to a local community clinic, you see the same doctor, the same nurse.
Right.
When I was practicing medicine, I used to think that my patients would come in really just to see my nurse because they loved her. She was the most fabulous person.
Right.
But, you know, that's the community part of what we do. And being in the community, it allows us to do things at a lower cost because hospitals, you know, not to bash the hospitals for any reason, but they're required to maintain a very high level of readiness.
Yeah,
right. They have to have the emergency rooms 24/7, the radiology 24/7, all these things that are required, and many of them are required by the state or by the federal government. It costs a lot of money to run a hospital. And so
and the specialized equipment, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we had somebody in from the Leonard, not on this show, but in the Leonard Cancer Institute over at Mission Hospital. I'll give them a little shout out. And they've got state-of-the-art robotic stuff to do lung surgeries and stuff. That's not cheap. I can't, you know, that takes a big, that's one center can afford to do that. You can't have that in every local thing. But how many people need that and how often?
Right. And we've got all that state-of-the-art robotic equipment as well at our hospitals. But you're right. It's not needed that often. And so by going out into the community and having smaller community clinics, we can provide care at a lower cost. And that's gotten the attention of some of our local employers. And so we're able to work together, you know, directly with the employers like Boeing and other employers and really lower the cost of healthcare, which is so important.
Do you ever go out to, are there, like you're saying, you're doing vaccination clinics, do you ever go out of your buildings and out into the community? Do you go to Boeing and do things? Do you show up at I don't know, community events or healthcare fairs, or not just to promote what you're doing, but to provide services?
Yeah, we do. We go out to community centers, we give talks, we provide care. We're actually doing something with the city of Irvine, actually tomorrow, in one of their senior centers, where we're going to be vaccinating some of their most frail, you know, seniors that have, they're not able to get out and go stand in line at Disneyland. We've, in Laguna Woods, we actually had a team of doctors and nurses that actually went out to the homes of some of the Laguna Woods residents and brought the vaccine.
There you
to
go.
Them.
That's the old school I'm looking for to really even go further. Well, can I give you one suggestion or critique? It sounds like you're doing a lot of good things I didn't know about. Maybe the community doesn't know about. Get on this thing. If you don't live on this smartphone here, this is why this show succeeds. This is, I think, why this station succeeds. And we think we're the prototype of a new sort of way of communicating, not just talking to people, but talking with them, like we did here this morning with all the people tuning in. I apologize. We had a lot of questions and we got to a fraction of them here. Would you come back sometime and we'll do less of about, you know, COVID and the hospital and more about just answering questions? Because there's a lot of confusion and chaos and fear still floating around. And every day we pick up one of these things, it only gets worse because there's no, isn't a vetted medium. It's anything goes. It's the Wild West. So it can be good to reach people, but can also be bad in that it's spreading rumors and falsehoods and other things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come back and chat with you guys. Dr. Trin and I go back many, many years.
We long
back in the trenches, together. Back in Bristol Park, your days.
Back, back when we were doing rounds at Mission Hospital in 1999 or something.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Back in the day. And on the cell phone, just to throw in another plug for Memorial Care, we have an app called MyChart, which gives you access to your medical records. You can make appointments. Wow. But you can also get a lot of COVID information. And so even if you're not a Memorial Care patient, go to memorialcare.org and sign up for MyChart. And that's one of the ways that we're actually connecting with people to let them know that they're able to get a COVID vaccine through MyChart. So
there you go.
It's a great, great opportunity.
Well, thank you for coming on. Any final things, Dr. Trin? I'm sorry I dominated the conversation here, but you brought in somebody. I don't get to talk to these kind of people very often. These are the guys who wanted to get on the hot seat. It was pretty cold today. It wasn't, we didn't get,
people.
Yeah, we didn't get too hot today here. I was surprised. Sometimes our audience gets a little wound up. Yeah.
I'm just very proud to be part of the Memorial Care family and have been around for a very long time and still admitting patients. And I remember the days where we were doing the Innovation Center at Memorial Care. I was the medical director of the center there. And it was always patients first. We identify our patient and what value can we add? What services can we add? And that's always been the spirit of Memorial Care and continues to be.
I don't know how I stumbled onto Bristol Park, but I always liked it. And then when they went away, I guess I didn't understand they became Memorial Care. I sort of did. And I guess that's why when I needed something, that was the first place I stumbled down to and said, well, can you help me? And they did. Somebody asked a quick question. I have to throw in one other thing. What are your guests? We read this before. Mr. Roberts, who are you? Who am I? Why? I'm the voice of the everyman. That's all I am here. I own the station, OC Talk Radio. I created this crazy online radio station 10 years ago because Orange County had no voice, had no real radio stations. And so it's sort of a live podcasting platform. We stream it live over our channel. We stream it live over Facebook and YouTube and anywhere to try and reach people here. And then it gets turned into a podcast where it continues to find an audience forever here. And we do about 20 shows. We stream live. I should give a plug where we are at the University of California, Irvine's Applied Innovation Center, the Beal Applied Innovation Center. We have a brand new studio there. And so we stream live from there. And the whole idea is to try and find new ways to tell stories and connect people because the old way ain't working, obviously. So that's what we try and do here. So I hope that answers your question. All right. Thanks for coming on. I hope to see you back again. And stick around because I have a question for you right after this. But let's wrap it up. Take us out, Dr. Trin. Any final thoughts?
Great session. Thank you so much, Dr. Mark Shea, for coming on. And we'll have you back again pretty soon, I'm sure.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.
It's been a pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you have it. For those listening live or later, it's our weekly health talk with Dr. Trin, where we bring in people that you wouldn't otherwise meet or hear from. like Dr. Mark Schaefer from Memorial Care Group here. Right here on Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.